Accession number 27805, Mr. Peter Laker, Reel 2. Now, we got to the point where you were called up in September, late September, from the sounds of it, 1940, yeah. And you were told up to go to Skegness. Now, this would be the HMS King Arthur shore station, wouldn't it? As yes. An old Butlin's holiday camp.
That's correct.
Now, what about, I mean, I don't know whether there's anything special about your journey to Skegness or your reception when you got there. Take us, what happened when you sort of, this journey and getting there?
Well, I got the train ticket, of course, and I set off from Brighton with two other chaps who were going to Skegness at the same time, a chap called Atkinson, and I can't remember the name of the other one. And we went to London, and the Red Caps there sorted us out and sent us over to King's Cross, where we saw a naval patrol who then directed us onto a train and put us on the way to Skegness.
Now, it just comes to mind, it's HMS Royal Arthur, I think, not King
is
Arthur.
Is it Royal
Arthur? they can look at the catalogue and they'll see which it is. Now, what was your reception when you got there? You know, because you're arriving as a civilian, and yet this is where you joined the Navy.
Yeah. Well, I think, if my memory serves me right, we were sort of very much shepherded, because we arrived fairly late in the day at Skegness. And we were more or less, I think, at that time, organised into chalets that we were going into and told to come up for a meal and to report the following morning to the mess, which was in the main buildings.
And did they do this in a sort of lots of shouting manner or were they perfect, you know, reasonable?
Oh, no, lots of shouting, of course. I think influence that they were in charge and not us.
Now, we're interested in these chalets because it was an old Butlins, I believe.
That is correct.
Now, what
yes.
were the chalets like? Could you describe, and how many to you? Just give us a picture of them.
The one I was in was, in fact, a family one, and it had three beds in the front and three beds in the back, so it was technically two rooms, but it was jolly cold, I can tell you, even so.
What, even in September?
Oh, yes, because when we were there, after the first night, I think, we had been given two blankets, and everybody complained about the cold, and so they decided there's only one option, to give us yet another blanket. But even then, we put our overcoats, when we got that issued, on the top of that. So, from the south, where we were normally quite warm, we went to somewhere where it was, from our point of view, jolly cold indeed.
Were the chalet you were in, you've got three of you in one room, three in another, were the washing facilities and everything adequate, or was the showers or anything like that?
Well, there was a communal shower room and bathroom where quite a few chalets were attached to it. I don't remember that we were allocated to a specific one, but very rarely did we get hot water, surprisingly, or if it was supposed to be hot, it was warm rather than hot.
Now, what about kitting out? Next day, I presume you were kitted out with your kit. What do you remember getting? As much detail as you remember. I know it's quite a long time ago. But.
Well, the first thing I think we got was a kit bag, and we were then given a uniform, which of course was trousers, jacket, but in this particular branch of the Navy, we had a peaked cap, as opposed to the round cap that most of the sailors were given. And then I think we were given things like vests, pants, socks, shirts, tie, and such like. And I do think we got an overcoat, as I say, we use that, I'm sure, to put on the top of the bed.
And did the uniform fit?
Yes, it did, actually. Well, I was, I suppose, standard size. I wasn't very fat in those days, and so I was lucky. I didn't have much problem. I think several chaps had problems with their boots, but I didn't have any problems.
Now, we look at the training through the means of a typical day in a way, because it sort of sparks up the memory a little bit, and look at the sort of training you had. This is your basic training, not particular training as a supply assistant. This is just general training. What time would your day start?
Well, they started about 7 o'clock in the morning when they called us, and we had, I believe, somewhere about 7:30, and then paraded about 8 o'clock when we used to do square bashing and all things that the Navy would want to teach us, how ships worked.
Hang on, going back to drill, was it? I mean, drill was something you were good at. Was the drill any different in the Navy from what you'd been used to in the
Boys' Brigade? No, it wasn't really in many ways. I came into that quite easily.
Were you unique? I mean, not unique, but did some of them have more trouble?
Yes, quite a few of them didn't know their left feet from their right, I'm afraid. But, I didn't have any problems with drills.
Did you enjoy drill still, as you were getting older, you know?
I didn't enjoy it as much as all that, in the sense I couldn't see the point in it, because I didn't think I was there to drill. I thought I was there to fight.
Now, what about the other thing, seamanship? I mean, obviously you wouldn't go far with your seamanship training, I presume. But how far did it go? What level of seamanship training did you get at Royal Arthur?
Well, I can only remember doing what I called a whaler drill, when we were taking a boat, which was in the swimming pool, and that was fixed front and back. And we used to have oars to go out and to row, so to speak, to show how it operated, and also how to put the sail up and things like that. But in general sense, we did very little seamanship.
Any knots and splices?
Just a few, but not that I can remember very many of them.
And what other types of training would you have? Any weapons training? I mean, infantry weapons, rifle and things. Did you do much of that?
Yes, we used to do rifle drill quite often.
As in learning to shoot?
As indeed learning to shoot, and also to how to carry it, how to dismantle it, and put it together again.
Were you a good shot? I mean,
I can't remember. I don't think I probably was.
Were there any other weapons you were introduced to, or was it just the rifle?
Just the rifle at that time. Although we were shown a 4-inch gun, or 3-inch, I'm not sure what, that was there, and shown what actually happened. Although it was never fired in anger.
Now, what about the any other types of training you were doing? I know it's only 6 weeks, but anything else you remember doing there?
No, I can't remember very much really about that.
What about the food? How were you taking you to the food you were getting? Breakfast, dinner, tea, whatever?
Well, there were three main halls there. There was York, Sussex and Kent. And I think I was in Kent. And as you say, we went to there every meal. And the meals were in trolleys, and dished out by the cooks from the trolleys.
And what was the food like?
I can't remember, but I don't think I was enamoured by it, from what I do remember.
Did you get enough of it?
Yes, I think we did at that time.
How were you getting on with the other lads? Do you know what I mean? Because it's a strange experience to be thrown together with a bunch of young lads, all are roughly the same age, I presume. Were they very different backgrounds? How did you get on with them?
Well, I found some of them a bit haughty pompous.
In what way?
Well, they thought they were better than anybody else. They knew more than anybody else. And I was a bit green, I suppose. Although I had been away from home with the Boys' Brigade and that, I found some of them not to my liking. I didn't make many friends at Royal Arthur.
Did you find them a bit crude? I'm thinking, you come from a slightly religious background, you know.
Yeah.
Did you find them crude, either verbally or physically, you know, just...
I don't remember. The group I was with, which was mainly, of course, clerical, so I don't think that many of them were crude in the literal sense, as we now think of crude.
You were all kept together, were you? The
yes, there was about 20 of us in a group.
And what about your instructors? What about them? How did they treat you? What were they like?
Well, they were, some of them were very good. One or two were a bit bombastic.
Now, what would a good instructor be like? And what would a
bad instructor? Chap who would tell you how to do things, not shout at you, and show his officialdom with a great exercise. You might say, I'm the PO in charge, and you will do that type of person.
Now, so anything happened while you were there in particular, or was it, you know, during the 6 weeks?
Not that I can remember. I remember we used to go, so to speak, ashore. We used to be allowed out of camp.
Tell us about that. What would you do?
Well, I used to go to a place called, I think it was called Immingham, just north of Skegness. I didn't go into Skegness very often.
Now, why was that? Why Immingham? Why not Skegness?
Well, I think I liked the country walk to that village, as opposed to going to Skegness, which I found was a seaside place where I lived in Brighton, having come from Brighton, which was seaside, to me, didn't mean anything. Whereas going to the country place meant more.
And what would you do when you got to Immingham? Nice walk, then what would you do?
Well, usually, of course, go get a pint of beer and perhaps go to the YMCA or the Women's Institutes and get some beans on toast or something like that.
Did you drink a lot then, or had you just started drinking? Or
no, I had been drinking before I joined up, I must admit. But I didn't drink a lot in the sense that I ever got drunk.
So just a social pint?
Yeah.
Anything else about your time at Skegness?
Not really that I can remember.
Now, you're there about 6 weeks, which would take us from late September into November, I would presume,
yeah.
Roughly speaking,
yeah.
1940. Now, what happened next?
Well, when I left Royal Arthur, I went down to, I was sent to Portsmouth because I was given a Portsmouth depot, and I went to the Royal Naval Barracks there by train.
Is that HMS Nelson?
That's right, it is called Nelson now.
And so you were joining the supply members mess, D block?
That's correct.
And what was your reception when you got to Portsmouth? I mean, what was it like there? Because the barracks are quite famously strict in some ways. How did you find them?
I found them a bit disorientating, shall we say, disorganised as far as I was concerned. But nevertheless, I think in many ways they were quite well organised in their own way.
In what way? What do you mean? What happened when you got there?
Well, you had a routine. You had to go round and get certain things done. For example, you had to go to the pay office and register your name, your number, and your rank. Then you would have to go to the medical and check there, then the dental. And so you went on through, and eventually you ended up at the drafting office.
So this is a sort of joining routine that you...
There was a routine which you had to follow, and you, at every station you had to get a stamp put on your joining.
And when you were there, I don't think you were there long, were you? But did they ask you at all about where you wanted to go? And did they give you any training as a supply assistant? Because you don't seem to have had any training as a supply assistant.
I got no training whatsoever. I just went, when I went aboard ship, I did not have any idea what I was actually going to do there. Whilst I was in the Royal Naval Barracks, I was attached to the General Mess Office, which really was a station, a sort of passing through section to go before you went on draft, and you helped out in the general office.
Now, what did that entail? What sort of duties did you have in the General Mess Office? What was going on in there?
Well, all the records obviously were kept there, which we did as the new boys never got to see, but we used to dish out the bread, the butter and so forth to the messes as they came down for it. We used to have a sheet from the office telling us how much each mess was entitled to receive, and we of course then just issued that amount.
Anything else you had to do in there?
Well, not really.
So very simple administrative duties.
Was very simple at that time. And, of course, again, because we were sort of passing through, no one wanted us, in the literal sense of the word, to do anything that was going to be lasting. They just wanted us to do the very menial task.
Now, at some point, you have to, or you have to decide what type of ship you're going to go on. There's sort of big ships, there's just small ships, destroyers, there's submarines, there's also aircraft carriers, all sorts of choices. What did you have any say at all in what you were going to be put on?
Well, the only thing I do remember is there was some talk at that time of supply assistance going to submarine, and I was horrified at that.
And why?
Well, because I'm claustrophobic in many ways, and I couldn't bear the thought of being enclosed and not having any means of escape. So I put it around, and whether it took any notice of, I'm not quite sure, that I would like to go on destroyers.
So you're not sure whether that actually had the desired effect, but who did you tell? I mean,
well, I told the PO that was in charge of us in the general mess section, and whether he told the officer in charge, lieutenant, I don't know.
Now, you then got a posting, a quick posting. Now, but there's some complications in what happened. So tell us the story of what happened. You were going to be drafted to HMS Viceroy. How did you feel about that? I mean, that's what happens next, isn't it?
Yes, I was quite pleased about that. I was quite excited, really, because I found out what it was. And so, as I say, it was my ideal ship, as far as I was concerned, although I had no idea what the conditions aboard that ship might be. But the fact it was a destroyer, the fact that it was on the East Coast convoys, was my cup of tea.
So you wanted that?
I did indeed. I was very pleased to get that.
But there's a complication. The Germans intervened, don't they?
There was a complication because I was ashore one night, and I booked a bed at Sally, I can't remember what they call it, in Portsmouth for the night, which cost me sixpence. And that night, the Portsmouth was bombed, and D Block, in fact, was burnt down. So consequently, I lost all my kit complete, and I only had the clothes that I stood up in. So they couldn't very well send me to Viceroy in that state.
So what happened?
Well, they then got us all together and took us onto what was called HMS Excellent. That was Whale Island in Portsmouth, where we were put in some spare barracks they had there. And they had, of course, to re-kit us all and get us sorted out, ready for sea again.
Now, when what month is this, roughly speaking? Is this still before Christmas? Or?
Yes, it's about November, the
still
end
November.
Of November, yeah.
And anything else happened at Excellent, at Whale Island?
Well, I can only remember that it took about 4 days for us to get fully kitted up because, of course, they hadn't made any preparation for this sort of thing to happen.
So what happens then?
Well, then I was sent back to Royal Naval Barracks for one night, and I can't remember where I stayed, and then sent off with a ticket to Rosyth, well, Edinburgh, Rosyth, where the Viceroy was based.
And what happened when you got to, was it, well, the other side of the you went to Rosyth itself?
I did, yes.
Edinburgh, isn't it?
Yes.
And what was your reception when you got there? You go aboard the HMS Caroline, is it? Although
yeah.
I thought that was the one at Belfast, actually.
Oh, it might be that.
You're not quite sure?
Not quite sure, no.
What happened? I mean, the Viceroy wasn't there anyway, was it?
No. So I went to I was taken to the base ship, first of all, in Rosyth Dockyard, and I was told there that the Viceroy was at sea, so I would have to stop aboard. Was it Calliope?
Could have been. I'm not sure. I just thought Caroline was in. I know you went to Belfast later on,
yeah.
And I'm pretty certain it's That's a Pollock dock.
Yeah.
The Caroline. But, I mean, I may be wrong, of course. So you just put you're on shore just a night or so?
About three or four nights, I think it was, before Viceroy came in. And she came in at night. When I say night, I think it was late evening. And then I was shunted over to there straight away.
Now, what were your first impressions of what? Can you give us a description of the? Because I know people can look at photographs and things, but it doesn't give the essence of what the Viceroy was like. Mm. It was a V&W destroyer type, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So what was it like as a ship?
Well, looking at it in the general sense of the word, I was quite enamoured with it. Looking at it on the that evening. But when I got down to the mess and found out there were 22 in the mess, which was in a room, I suppose, that only had 9 hooks for slinging hammocks, so that there was no way that 22 could sleep in the mess. So we all, well, some of us had to find other places to sleep. But the first night, I don't remember much about, in truthfulness.
So describe the ship a bit to us. I mean, what was it like?
Well, there was about 110 or so members in the crew, and we, of course, slept forward, whereas the officers slept aft. And it had an open deck, as we call it, to go from forward to aft. So in all weathers, you had to go out into the weather commitment, the elements, so to speak, to get from forward to aft, which made it sometimes very difficult. We used to have lifelines fitted to the ship's rails so that you slid along with a rope hanging on to these lifelines so that you didn't get washed overboard, because that could easily have happened in some circumstances.
Now, how did you settle into your mess deck? I mean...
Well, I settled into the mess deck quite well, actually, because we had a quiet mess, and everybody seemed to get on fairly well together.
Now, you were on East Coast Commerce. They were already on it when you joined them.
Yes.
You were joining as a supplier. You were just a supply assistant?
That's right, yes.
Now, let's look at a typical East Coast convoy then, you know, starting off at Rosyth. I think you do this in your notes as well. So, you know, what would a typical convoy like? So how would it start?
Well, there used to be 2 destroyers allocated to the convoy. The junior one, that is the captain was junior to the other skipper, would then go down at night to Methil, and there he would anchor and act as guardship for the night. The next morning, quite early, he would up anchor, and so would the merchant ships that were in the convoy, and they would all get into 2 lines, shepherded into 2 lines by the duty destroyer, and sail south, whereupon, as soon as the convoy really was underway, the other destroyer would come down the 1st or 4th, and join and lead the convoy south. Well, as we went down the east coast, the ships would come into Newcastle and come out, Sunderland, Middlesbrough, and so forth, all the way down.
Now, how good were they at keeping station?
They weren't bad, because they were ships which did this voyage regularly, and therefore they knew the pros and cons, most of them. The real bugbear was sometimes the foreign ships who were coal-burning, and they would make a lot of smoke, and that used to upset the skippers.
Were you able to keep a steady speed? Because sometimes ships just can't go as fast as you want them to, especially if you've got a mixed convoy. Well, was there a problem with speed?
Quite often there was, particularly in rough weather, because the fastest convoy I could ever remember was 7 knots going south, and that was, you know, quite a good one. Most of them were between 4 and 5.
That's pretty slow.
I'm afraid it was.
Now, so what was a tip? So you've started a convoy. So what are you doing? You know, on a typical day during this convoy, what were your duties as your thing?
Well, my job was to supply nuts and bolts and things, anything that was, shall we say, necessary for repairs and making of anything that was required aboard, keeping the paint. And believe you me, they used to use a lot of paint and things of that nature.
So you weren't supplying food and stuff, you know, that side of supply.
No,
you were supplying, what would you call it, generic?
Naval stores.
You supplied naval stores. And how did you have to keep a record? What sort of,
yes,
what system did you use?
Well, everything that went out had to be, so to speak, signed for. And there were some things which were called on permanent loan. And so I used to have a permanent loan book for things like binoculars and the compasses and things of that nature, which were all part of naval stores, but were on permanent loan to certain people.
Now, were you on a watch, or were you a day man? In other words, you worked from, not 9 to 5, but...
Yeah. I was a day man, actually. I used to work from 8 o'clock to about 5 o'clock. But, of course, I was always on call should anything be wanted.
Did you have an action station as well?
Yes, I did.
What was your action station?
Well, initially I was on the forward ammunition party that was receiving the shells from the magazine by hoist up into the mess deck and then pushing them up a chute to the gunners above. But afterwards I became an Orlikan loader to a leading seaman who was the gunner, and so I was his number one, so to speak.
What did you have to do for the Orlikan? I mean, as a loader, what would you do?
Well, I used to have to, if he wanted the drum to be taken off, then it was my job to take it off and put a new one on.
Easy?
Not always, especially when it's rolling.
Would it jam, or...?
It could do if I wasn't careful. But I used after about third or fourth time of doing it, I became a bit more careful and realised that speed wasn't everything, but accuracy was.
Now, did you have so you worked in the naval stores? If there was an action station, you'd be called up to. Well, initially the forward ammunition party, later on as Orlikan loader. Was there anything else? You know, was it, you didn't have a cruising? So your cruising station was in the stores, I presume.
Yeah.
Now, so what happens next? You're going down the East Coast. You've got ships leaving and joining Newcastle and the major ports. Ports down the East Coast.
Now,
when would the danger point come?
When we got to Flamborough Head, that was a place where the North Convoy quite often passed the South Convoy, or the South passed the North, whichever way you want it. And I do remember on one occasion there was a fog there, and so the convoy met there, and there was so much panic, everybody anchored. And when the fog lifted, we could see the panic that was in existence, because ships were everywhere, and I mean everywhere. And it was just as well we had anchored, because believe you me, we would have had many, many collisions if we hadn't have done so. But another occasion, I remember, we used to have radar at its initial stage, and that was on a fixed bearing on the mast of 60 degrees. And this had valves which were about the size of footballs. And they were strung, believe it or not, in elastic bands. And so when the sea was rough, as it usually was, these valves jumped up and down, or swung, or whatever you like to call it, and 9 times out of 10 broke. So we didn't have any radar. And so the captain on one occasion decided that he must have lookouts up in the crow's nest.